It's the morning magazine for Wednesday, January 6th. Good morning, I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up, after taking a second look at a proposal to revamp the Macy's department store, Boulder City Council is moving forward with the plan. We'll have a report on that. And we'll hear from a Boulder nursing home that started vaccinating elderly at-risk residents yesterday. Our regular Wednesday features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with local herbalist Brigitte Mars. After the BBC headlines at 8:30, Dr. Chris Urbina, medical officer for the Boulder County Health Department, will join us to talk about the county's vaccine rollout plan and other COVID-related topics. We'll also be taking some listener questions via email. If you have a question for Dr. Urbina, you can email that to dj@kgnu.org. That's letter D, letter J, at kgnu.org. Dr. Chris Urbina from Boulder County Health joining us at 8:35. At 9, from the Pacifica Radio Archive, a look at the early days of LSD, its initial development and its social history. Greg will be in at 9:30 to mix the music for you on the Morning Sound Alternative. All still ahead after these headlines from Jamie Sudler.
A day after Boulder County moved from the most restrictive level red on the state's COVID-19 dial to the less restrictive level orange, Boulder City Council received an update on cases from the County Health Department. Executive Director Jeff Zayak warned that the good news might not last long.
Today, when we met with the State Health Department, we learned from the mobility data that our mobility data over the last 2.5 weeks, as compared to Thanksgiving, as an example, we were showing more mobility, so less people staying at home. So unfortunately, we are expecting to see some increased cases associated with both the Christmas holiday as well as New Year's. We will not know exactly what that looks like until we get to about the 15th of January.
Boulder County's move from red to orange means loosened capacity restrictions for offices, retail, restaurants, and a variety of other types of businesses and facilities. Boulder City Council has drafted a letter to the State Health Department emphasizing the importance of ensuring equitable approach to vaccine distribution for Latinx, Black, Indigenous, and other marginalized communities disproportionately impacted by the virus. In Boulder, people 70 and older are starting to receive the vaccine on Monday. 182 new cases of the coronavirus were reported Tuesday, but no new deaths. We'll have more on the status of COVID-19 in Boulder County and vaccine updates coming up at 8:35. CU Boulder officials announced yesterday that Chancellor Phil DeStefano has tested positive for COVID-19 and will be isolating at home. A news release from CU explains that DeStefano is experiencing mild symptoms and his daughter also tested positive for the virus. DeStefano said that, like many others, he has been following public health advice and that his family's situation is a reminder of how important it is to continue to follow public health guidance and to get tested. Meanwhile, Coloradans 70 and older will receive the coronavirus vaccine before teachers and other frontline workers as the state moves into the next inoculation phase. In a letter sent yesterday to healthcare providers, Scott Bookman, the state's coronavirus incident commander, said that they are working toward being able to announce by the end of this week how people older than 70 can schedule appointments with hospitals and health systems. The State Department of Public Health and Environment anticipates that 2/3 of Coloradans 70 and older will be vaccinated by the end of February. Last week, Governor Jared Polis changed the state's plan to move Coloradans 70 and older into Phase 1B. However, the State Health Department clarified yesterday that essential workers, including teachers, should not be inoculated against COVID-19 until after healthcare workers, first responders, and people 70 and older receive their shots. The clarification came as at least two Denver area school districts announced they would begin vaccinating teachers early as next week. The Denver Post reports those plans must now be halted. People in the state who don't fit into Phase 1B are expected to be vaccinated in the spring and summer. Elementary students in the Boulder Valley School District returned yesterday to in-person classes. The Daily Camera reports that the district's second semester plan includes elementary students attending 4 days a week in person. Secondary students are starting remotely and will be phased in under a hybrid model with 2 days in person. Mondays will remain what's called a launch day, with students in all grades learning independently from home so teachers can plan. St. Vrain Valley District students return today, with elementary kids attending 4 days a week in person. Secondary students start online and will be phased in to attend 2 days a week in person. Activists in Denver are looking to put two measures on the ballot, both of which address environmental issues. One initiative seeks to curb climate change by investing in green jobs, sustainable transportation, and clean energy, and would be paid for by new taxes on electricity and natural gas. If approved by voters, Denverite reports that most commercial, industrial, and residential property owners would receive a monthly allowance for how much electricity and natural gas they could use. The owner of any building that exceeds that cap would pay extra. The proposal would need about 9,000 signatures to make the November 2021 ballot and is nicknamed Polluters Must Pay. In another initiative, climate activists are seeking to keep more of the city's waste out of landfills. The plan, dubbed Waste No More, would require many businesses like apartments, restaurants, and hotels to provide compost and recycling pickup services. The activists hope the initiative will improve Colorado's dismal recycling record, which falls well below the national average of 35%. Kate Bailey, policy director at EcoCycle in Boulder, which helped draft the measure, said that moving Denver forward is a huge way to move recycling forward across the state. The National Weather Service is predicting sunny skies today through Friday with highs in the 40s. Currently, there's a possibility of snow on Saturday. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
Ten minutes after 8 now at listener-supported community radio. Boulder City Council last night signed off on the reuse of what was the Anchor department store when the city's 29th Street Mall opened back in 2006. KGNU's Roz Brown has more.
From clothing to housewares to furniture, the big box Macy's department store at the 29th Street Mall was a mainstay for shoppers for nearly 40 years. Known as May D&F when it opened in the original Crossroads Mall at the same location in 1964, it was renamed Foley's and finally became Macy's. A casualty of changing consumer habits, 3 years ago, Boulder's store made the list of those Macy's would close across the country. Since then, the corporation has submitted an application to add 2 stories to the building, 155,000 square feet for office space, about 8,000 square feet of retail space on the ground, a public plaza, and a roof deck. Boulder Chamber of Commerce CEO John Taylor encouraged council to support the reuse concept, noting that Boulder's sales tax was trending flat even before the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, some other surrounding communities are experiencing sales tax increases, even double digits. Boulder is seeing nearly a double-digit decrease, reflecting a corresponding decrease in business activity.
In contrast, resident Brenda Lee wondered why Boulder needs more retail, especially in that location.
Reading through the plan, I saw that it aims to revitalize 29th Street Mall. What I find kind of sadly ironic is that while retail and restaurants are mentioned in this revitalization plan, many businesses at 29th Street Mall have come and gone, leaving behind empty storefronts and vacant restaurants. It's become quite clear across Boulder that only the large corporations are able to afford commercial rent. For example, 29th Street Mall is lined with Apple, Victoria's Secret, H&M, Anthropologie. Any mom and pop stores that tried in the past to maintain a business have long gone. So why exactly we need more retail space is not clear.
There had been a push to add affordable housing to the site, but city staff and Macy's argued it was not a good fit due to zoning and carbon emissions constraints. Councilman Bob Yates.
I wish I could wave a magic wand and make this all housing. I wish I could change our zoning. I wish I could pick it up and move it to a slightly different location. I wish I could waive the requirements as far as open space so that we could get a lot of housing. But unfortunately, those are not the cards we've been dealt.
Yates, along with Councilmember Rachel Friend, lamented the loss of the family-friendly store.
I also am really sorry to see Macy's go. I shop there with my kids, and I think it's a loss to the community, and I think the last of its kind in the community, so that's just sad to me.
Macy's estimates the remodel will add 400 to 500 employees compared to around 100 today. The city's planning board had approved the proposal on a close 4-3 vote, which led council to review the decision. Councilman Adam Swetlick conveyed his disappointment about what will occupy the site.
To me, this is some really beautiful late-stage capitalism in effect. correct. This is the best way to get to the thing we need the least. And again, I don't think this is the project that any of us want here. And what does that say about how we're doing city planning right now? But it's probably going to end up being the project that happens. And one final word. I think we heard the best arguments from both the applicant and the Chamber of Commerce as to why sales tax is not a good way to run a city. So maybe that's another thing we need to look at from this discussion we've had this evening. If we're planning on having people with $100,000 incomes coming in to save this community, both by pushing up area median incomes and expecting them to spend more money than people who absolutely have to, I think we're kidding ourselves.
The reuse approval of the store is conditional until lawyers on both sides can agree to a contract that says Macy's will pay $3 million in what's called a linkage fee that will go toward affordable housing. They also will be required to offer affordable commercial space on the site. The proposal was approved on an 8-1 vote, with Mary Young dissenting. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
8:15 at KGNU. Nurses began vaccinating high-risk elderly residents in the nursing facility at Fraser Meadows in Boulder yesterday. We spoke with Michelle McParland, the Vice President for Health and Supportive Services at Fraser.
Well, today and tomorrow we have a vaccine clinic set up with Walgreens to vaccinate our skilled nursing residents and staff. So it's the 54 residents in our skilled nursing community and all of the team members that take care of them. That all came through a partnership between the federal government and CVS and Walgreens. All skilled nursing facilities were partnered with one of those two pharmacy providers to have access to early administration of COVID vaccine for the most vulnerable residents here in our county.
How difficult or easy was it to set that up? Can you explain the process a little bit?
Yeah, the process initially started with a registration on the CMS website, and then we got partnered with either Walgreens or CVS. We received a contact person through Walgreens who notified us that they would be our vaccine coordination lead, and we coordinated with them to let them know how many residents and staff needed vaccine, what days they would be available to come on site. And then we had site coordination with our director of nursing, who then was able to get us scheduled for today and tomorrow.
And it's 54 residents of the skilled nursing care part of Fraser. And then how many staff?
We have 109 dedicated staff members in those care areas. That includes our caregivers, housekeepers, dining staff, facility staff, anybody that would potentially cross over, like our IT staff, et cetera. We were thinking we're going to vaccinate about 210 folks in the next 2 days. So we're also including in those numbers any contractors that have reason to come into our community. Some of our residents have private duty caregivers. We have hospice providers that are coming in. So we've included a lot of those folks in our numbers to ensure that anyone coming in contact with our residents has access to vaccine and can be vaccinated if they choose.
How is the mood there?
The excitement was really palpable this morning. When the Walgreens team arrived, we had lines of people waiting to get vaccine, and we provided each person who participated with a button saying that they had been participated in the vaccine program here. It's just a very exciting, kind of feels like the beginning of the end of the pandemic, and we realize that we're not out of the woods yet, that this seems like a little glimmer of hope.
We've talked about those who have gotten the vaccine today and tomorrow in the skilled nursing part of Fraser, but you also have assisted living and independent living, right?
Correct. Yeah, we have somewhere between 450 and 475 older adults living on our campus total. So that includes our independent living and our assisted living and memory support communities.
Is there a schedule for those folks to get vaccinated?
Yes, we are coordinating again with Walgreens to set up vaccine clinics that will make available vaccine for residents and staff in those care areas as well. So those dates have been set for late January, January 28th and 29th. So we're hoping to vaccinate as many as 500 additional staff members and residents within the month, get the very first vaccine into those residents and staff members.
Did those residents fall into the state's Phase 1A or Phase 1B? I understand Phase 1B includes anybody over 70, but what phase is Fraser in, other than the folks, of course, who are high risk, who are getting vaccinated today and tomorrow?
Yeah, anybody that in our independent living would fall into the 1B category. We would lump in our assisted living folks. I would personally lump in our assisted living and memory support folks in with 1A. But the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment earmarked the first dose of the vaccine to go to skilled nursing. So we did have to wait a couple extra weeks, longer than we had expected, for assisted living and memory support. But we're very excited to have access at the end of the month.
Any concerns about supply, or has Walgreens been confident that they can provide you with what you need for everybody?
We feel pretty confident that Walgreens has this covered. We've got a very good relationship with the vaccine leads through the Walgreens administration program and are in frequent communication. So I think that that's bolstered our confidence in the supply chain.
Did you have an existing relationship with Walgreens before this?
Not particularly. Mm-hmm. We've done flu clinic through Walgreens and through Safeway historically, but we did not have a previous relationship. But we do know that this is a contract relationship through CMS, and so we've just trusted the process and have crossed our T's and dotted our I's and worked hard to make sure that we were putting our residents at the top of the list.
So CMS is the federal regulatory agency that you've been working with to facilitate the partnership with Walgreens. Fraser Meadows is the first nursing care facility that I'm aware of in the city of Boulder to be vaccinating residents and staff, and among the first in the county. Is that right?
I did hear that the Peaks Care Center in Longmont actually administered their vaccine to their residents and staff in late December. So I think they were actually the first community in the county to get vaccine, but I think we're a close second. And so, we were just really excited to cultivate the relationship with Walgreens and make sure that we got in at the beginning here.
Michelle McParland is the Vice President for Health and Supported Services at Fraser Meadows, a retirement community in Boulder, vaccinating their highest risk residents as well as frontline staff. We'll have more about the vaccine rollout plan and other COVID-related topics coming up in just about 15 minutes. Speaking with Dr. Chris Urbina, the medical officer from Boulder County Health Department. If you have a question, you can email that to dj@kgnu.org, letter D, letter J, at kgnu.org. Coming up on 22 minutes after 8 here at Listener Supported Community Radio, time for a regular feature of Wednesday mornings on the magazine, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Today, Ted Cruz will be leading about a dozen senators to oppose the Electoral College certification of President-elect Joe Biden. They will fail, but it exposes a major weakness in our Electoral College system. First of all, two presidential elections in the last 20 years went to the candidate who lost the popular vote. And secondly, only about half of the states banned so-called faithless electors. If you are an elector in the Electoral College, you may try to vote for someone other than the candidate the people of your state voted for. Last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously upheld laws across the country that remove or punish rogue Electoral College delegates. You may remember that after the 2016 election, a handful of Electoral College delegates pledged to Hillary Clinton in Colorado and Washington State voted instead for Colin Powell or John Kasich. Michael Baca was our most famous faithless elector from Colorado that year. But now Donald Trump and many Republicans have been trying to muddy the water so some state legislatures can actually assign an alternative slate of electors. Some people want to get rid of the Electoral College altogether, but this would require a constitutional amendment, which would require a two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress and approval by three-quarters of the states. As a workaround, several states, including Colorado last November 3rd, have signed on to a proposal to sidestep the Electoral College by joining a, quote, national popular vote interstate compact to pledge their Electoral College votes to whichever candidate wins the national popular vote, regardless of how the candidates perform in their own state. So far, the compact has the support of 15 states and the District of Columbia, making up a total of 196 electoral votes of the 270 needed to win the White House. The uncertainty and instability caused by the current state-by-state winner-take-all method of electing the president is on full display today when Congress meets to count the electoral votes and Trump is trying his best to overturn the election, attempting to use weaknesses in our Electoral College system to steal the win. The National Popular Vote Bill will guarantee the presidency to the candidate who receives the most popular votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Here's how the math works. For candidates to be elected, they need to win 270 electoral votes. The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact will go into effect when enacted by states with a majority of the presidential electors, that is, 270 of the 538. After the compact goes into effect, all of the electoral votes from all of the enacting states must be awarded to the candidate who received the most popular votes in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. The electors in all states in the compact must vote for whoever wins the popular vote. The rest of the states can vote for whoever they want, but the National Popular Vote Compact states must give all their 270 combined votes to the winner of the popular vote. Therefore, the national popular vote winner will always be supported by a majority of the Electoral College and thus become president. As I said, Colorado is already part of the compact, but if you want to know more about the national effort and what actions are being taken now and in which states, you can visit nationalpopularvote.com. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
Sunny today with temperatures in the upper 40s. And for the next couple days, mostly sunny, mid to upper 40s. That's what the next few days look like here on the Front Range of Colorado, where it's coming up on 26 minutes after 8 o'clock, and time for our regular Wednesday morning visit from herbalist Brigitte Mars and her program, Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. And I think a lot of us have been staring at computers and screens and cell phones for a long time now. And I just want to remind us that people used to do things to take care of their eyes, and we need to be doing that even more than our ancestors. So according to the principles of Asian medicine, a lot of the health of our eyes has to do with the health of our liver. And our liver really appreciates it when we get a little bit of the sour flavor, like lemon and water, or tart apples, or kiwi or strawberries, and it loves it when we eat dark green leafy vegetables. And the liver appreciates it when we don't pollute our bodies with refined oils. So a great thing we can do for ourselves is make our own salad dressing, and ideally eating some greens and your own salad dressing on a daily basis is a great thing to do. Other good eye foods are things like blueberries, goji berries, sunflower seeds, preferably raw, sunflower sprouts, and of course, things that your mom probably told you, carrots and sweet potatoes and winter squashes. Something my grandmother did that I still do on occasion is after a day of lots of computer work, just spending some time laying down with slices of organic cucumbers over your eyes. This is cooling, soothing, anti-inflammatory, a really nice way to thank your eyes for all the work that they do for us. You might also think about when you're sitting at your computer to every 15 minutes gaze off in the distance. You can look out a window or look at some beautiful art. I'm a big believer in eye exercises, and I just released a YouTube on how to do eye exercises. So if you go to YouTube, Brigitte Mars, check out eye exercises. I used to wear glasses until 10th grade, and doing these exercises really helped me. You know, some people that we've heard of, Michelangelo and let's say, Michelangelo and other great artists used to bathe their eyes as a way of thanking them. And they would use things like chamomile tea or rue and fennel tea. Of course, it would be a cool down tea, and you'd want to do it with freshly made tea. So that's an interesting thing to do, just to thank your eyes. And there's a great line of homeopathic remedies that have eye drops, Similasan. Now, in Colorado, a lot of us have dry skin, dry hair, and dry eyes. So making sure you're getting adequate oils. Some people like to take a fish oil supplement or even a omega algae supplement that is made with what the fish eat, the algae, to strengthen the eyes. So we want to be able to see true throughout our whole lives. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Naturally with Brigitte Mars every Wednesday morning here on the KGNU Morning Magazine.